Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Happy Friday to all of our loyal listeners. We have quite the treat for you. Ever heard of her? Marie-Philippe Poulin, captain of Canada's women's hockey team, three-time Olympic gold medalist, and joining us through the Sobeys Feed the Dream campaign, which is a privilege of ours to bring on the show. Bonjour, Marie. How are you this morning?
Bonjour, Liz. I'm doing great. How are you?
We're good. We're very excited to talk to you. I mean, I am at least. It's been quite the journey following along. We've been so excited about your guys' success. And I guess just what's it feel like to be a living, breathing legend, you know?
Well, it's been pretty amazing to be back. I was able to go see my parents, my grandma, being able to share that medal. Obviously, they're a big part of it. So just taking a little breather, enjoying that moment, because it's been quite a journey, and very excited to be able to share with my people.
And so just we'll mention how we are supporting you with Sobeys stores across Canada have generously shown their support for Team Canada athletes. I actually got one of those really cool bags with your face on it, which I'm going to cherish forever. Maybe you can sign it. You're providing Olympians with special Sobeys grocery cards as part of Feed the Dream movement. And you're also, Sobeys is giving away the chance to win free groceries for a year. So you can visit feedthedream.ca. You're a part of that. Obviously, a lot of support going into this. What was the best part about, you know, obviously no fans, no family there, but you were able to interact with people from back home. What was the support like? I know a little bit different this time, but virtual messages and virtual love while you guys were over in Beijing.
Yeah, I would say I think they've done an amazing job in order for us to connect with our family, and especially with Sobeys. We're able to talk with them, and obviously they're a big part, and they Sobeys know that. Throughout this whole commitment of our career, they know our family is very important. So mm-hmm. obviously we had a couple of Zoom calls. We were able to FaceTime, and there was different ways to get a couple of videos through Hockey Canada. So all throughout it, obviously having no fans and none of our family in the stands, we're still able to manage to talk to them and share this experience with them.
Okay, so we got to ask the question that's on all of Canada's mind. How do you have this incredible clutch gene, this ability to be on fire when it matters, gold medal games where you've scored, and three times you've gotten the golden goal. What goes into that? How do you do this? Give us some tips so I can do this in my life. What is it to be clutch? What does it need to be?
I'm still trying to figure that one out, but to be honest, I think it's just my day-to-day routine, my work ethic. That's something I take a lot of pride in. It's either when no one is watching and practices and games, no matter what game it is, I'm going to always give my 100%. It doesn't matter who or where or what. That's something I truly value. And to be honest, I'm pretty lucky that happened at those big games. But I think the work ethic is something I value a lot, and the people I surround myself with. This group was very special, to be honest. I'm a big believer that good things happen when you surround yourself with good people, and I think this one was a good one to be around, that's for sure.
Hi, Marie, and yes, we're all excited to speak with you today. It isn't just Salish. Yeah, you're absolutely a hero in this country, and you have been for a while. You know what I'm most curious about with the clutch thing? One, your answers always involve other people, which just kind of does speak to your leadership qualities. You never really make it about yourself, but I'm going to keep trying to have you make it about yourself. I'm going to keep trying here. Are you clutch in other areas of your life? Like, if you have to parallel park on an extremely busy street, you know, Montreal is tough. Like, it's all on hills, and it's the winter time, and you're there, and it's rush hour, and Marie-Philippe Poulin has to parallel park on a hill. Like, do you do that? Are you the one who's just parking the car? Like, are you clutch in other areas?
That's a good question. I actually love driving, and I love parallel parking.
See,
I would be okay. But, that's funny. But to be honest, in those situations, I like it. I love it. And I'm not going to lie, those are the moments you work for. And obviously not for panel parking when hockey-wise, but it's always exciting.
So you're the captain of this team. You're a part of the heartbeat, obviously. And talking to some of your teammates throughout the last couple months, the main message that I've received, at least, was that this type of team had a different dynamic, a different vibe, something really special, was what I heard a lot. What comes into establishing that type of mentality? Obviously, it comes through the leadership group. It comes through your preparation during the pandemic, during centralization. What made it such a special team this time around?
Well, I think it was a top-to-bottom, bottom-top type of leadership. It started from our GM, Gina, to our coaching staff, to the leadership group, and all of the girls that came in. It was a four-year process, to be honest. We started with 50 players, 50 members on that group, and obviously, as the years goes on, there's people kind of getting cut and getting away, but they're still with us, and everybody was involved. And as the group came together at the Olympics since centralization, we really started that culture that, to be honest, everybody could be themselves on and off the ice from a rookie perspective. Like, they were themselves. They were confident. They were coming in with a lot of skills, but they showed up. We never stopped them for being who they are, and I think that made a big difference. And since that 2018 loss, we knew we had to change some stuff. From our leadership point, we had to do things different. From our GM, things just took a whole turn, and everybody really dialed in, bought in, and was willing to do anything we could to bring that gold medal.
How much did winning at the World Championships this summer, getting that end of the streak of six consecutive losses, how much did that give you guys a boost going into, you know, what is the biggest stage with Beijing?
Well, obviously, like you mentioned, we were on a losing streak at the World Championship. We were looking for a long time since 2012. So starting that year with that win was huge for us. And even in the preliminary round, being able to win 5-2 against the States, it's been a while. And I think that felt pretty good at that moment. And being able to win in Calgary, where we train all year long, was huge. And obviously, we enjoyed that moment. We enjoyed that win. But when September hit, we knew our next goal, what it was. It was that gold medal game, and we just went right back to work from practices to games in the junior A, from game in Finland against U.S., all of it together. We really focused, and we were pretty dialed in the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, the lead-up to this Olympics was probably much different for you than any previous Olympics, you know, with the restrictions that happened with no league. How much more difficult was it to be prepared to be at your A game going in this time around with just the obstacles you had to overcome?
This group was very resilient. We had great people around us, our doctor, our GM. I don't know how many nights of sleep they had, but not many. with things getting canceled, with the pandemic, with COVID, with all of the Zoom calls, like every day there was something, and they managed everything so well. On their side, on our group, on our player side, everybody was willing to adjust when it was time. And we were just following that leader, her doc, her GM, her coaching staff, and we just went at it. And, like, for example, against the game in Russia, against Russia at the Olympics, the masks were thrown. She came in before the game, and we just took it with a smile because this group has been through a lot through the last 4 years. And we took it with that smile. We still enjoy it, and we're ready to go at that time.
I know it's maybe an impossible thing to rank, but you've been at four Olympics now. You've won three times. You've gotten, you know, a lot of personal moments and success throughout those. Does the lead up to this one and the fact that you had to bounce back from a silver medal, you had to kind of pick yourselves up from such a devastating loss, not having the same infrastructure you had to train and to be, you know, at your best, does this one mean a little bit more because of everything you had to go through for it to be, you know, that triumphant return to victory? Or is it just too hard to rank the gold medals in your life?
I'm not going to lie, Alicia. I've been trying to think a little bit at all those different medals. That they're all pretty unique. But this one, I would say it's ranked pretty high right now. Like you mentioned, it hasn't been an easy 4 years. Even personally, my role changed in that team, being able to, like you mentioned, go from a silver medal, which was very, very hard to swallow at that time, and just putting our head down and go to work, knowing that we want to bring it back to Canada. It's pretty high. I think creating that culture, to see the young ones with that smile on that blue line at the end, was all worth it. I saw myself there when I was 18, and being able to share that with the young ones and the older ones even was very special.
This can't be your last Olympics.
Marie, don't do it to us. I still love it enough, so we'll go year by year, but I still really love it.
You know, I find it, again, really fascinating whenever great players like yourself they don't seem to love the limelight. Like, again, you don't – like, you thrive under pressure. That's very clear. I don't think that could be any more clear. And yet it feels like when you do stuff like this, like interviews and people heap praise on you, that you kind of just immediately want to put it on other people and your camp, your surrounding, the young players, the people that you look around in the dressing room. It's got to be part of the reason why you're so easy to follow is that, yeah, not only do you do it by example, but that you don't take that credit for yourself. But is there almost a small part of you when you do this, you accomplish all these great things, where after it's all said and done, you go, great, now people want to ask me about me? Like, you hate it that much.
I love talking. I wish I could tell you I had a script in front of me and I need to say that, but it really comes out how I feel. And I look around the dressing room and they make me smile. They make me having so much fun. And I think that we all did that. And we all a leader on that team and don't need a letter. But I was very lucky to be surrounded with that leadership group that we're able to bring it back to Canada.
God, it's so cool because you just said a couple minutes ago how this was your dream when you were a kid, right? And you've been able to achieve that. How much do you feel, just try for a second to feel how proud of yourself you are that there's millions of young girls looking up to this team and to you and your journey through four Olympics. Like, do you ever sit back and think, like, I'm going to be people's, you know, idol, and I am people's idols, young boys, young girls that want to be me one day because of everything I've done. Like, you were once in those shoes. Do you ever take time to sit there and have that perspective?
I haven't yet, but soon. I think seeing on social media, I think having a lot of messages telling you their little girls starting playing hockey because of us, and even Sarah Nurse and I with Tim Horton with the Barbies, those are all little things that makes a big deal. It makes me very happy to see. And today, to be honest, it just popped up on my Facebook 12 years ago. We were winning in Vancouver with Carol, Kim, Charlie. Those were our idols of mine, and I was able to win that. And looking back to 12 years now, it's still happening, and being able to be the maybe a model for them, it's huge. I take a lot of pride in, and obviously waking up in the morning, it makes me happy to do that, and it's an honor, to be honest.
Do you feel like a lot of progress has happened? You know, you said 12 years ago, you were talking about, wow, I won in Vancouver, and that was your first time. Do you feel like happy with the growth of women's hockey? Are you content with where we're at, or is this just like, hey, the momentum over the last couple of years of what we've done, it's still, there's so much more to go?
I would say I would say it happened very quick, but good things take time, I guess. I wish it would have been a little bit faster. I think, like you mentioned, 12 years ago, we were there, we had the momentum where we won in Vancouver in Canada. 12 years, fast forward 12 years, we still kind of have to fight for women's hockey. We have to mention it. We have to use that momentum from the Olympics and creating the PWHP Association to make sure people know what we want. And to be honest, like, creating that association, having the best player in the world all together, I think says a lot. And I think every time we showcase our product on the ice, people realize, okay, wow, that's faster than we thought. That's better than we thought. So hopefully the right people watch. Hopefully the investor, like, see what we can offer, because we truly believe in our product, and we'll keep fighting. We'll keep talking about it, because we truly, I think, deserve a league for sure, not only for ourselves, but in the future generation.
I mean, it certainly feels like it would be another missed opportunity with, we saw record-breaking numbers of viewership from here in Canada and United States, and players all over the world getting an opportunity for their first Olympics. So it would feel, again, like another missed opportunity if the fall came around and there wasn't anything for you guys to fully be showcased. And I guess my next question is, what is next for you? You know, you said you're going to take some time, you're going to enjoy this gold medal. Do you take, you know, a couple months off? Are you back in the gym tomorrow? Like, what does someone of your caliber do as time off?
I'm not gonna lie, I would love to get back in the gym, but I know I need to take some time mentally, physically, a little bit. We're actually going on a little vacation, 15 of us on the group, so it should be pretty fun.
Wow. I didn't get the invite. Do you still have my email? Or?
I think I lost it.
Oh, shoot. I'll send it after.
After coming back, I think just getting back slowly into things, obviously our schedule with the World Championship kind of switched to August now, so things going to get started pretty quick. But obviously, I think having a league, creating that, the PWHPA, having that happening, has having more talk about it to make sure something is in the make for sure.
Okay, last question. How's Arlo, your amazing, cute little pup? I saw a picture of him with the medal around his neck. What do you do with an Olympian that has a dog? Like, where did you put him when you're away?
We're lucky to have parents that actually want to take care of our dog. So he was at my parents. We just got him last night. So been pretty fun. We missed him. So it was good to spend some time with him.
Okay, good. Well, we need more Arlo pictures on your social media feeds, please. That's our biggest request after this interview. It's like, we got enough gold medals. We need more Arlo, okay?
Perfect. Sounds good.
Awesome. Well, we'll let you go. I'm sure you got like 100 medals to go polish and, you know, go talk to some other networks. But really appreciate you taking the time today, Marie. And I'll wait for that invite for the trip. I'll send you my email, okay?
Perfect. I'll make sure I look into it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. Marie-Philippe Poulin, three-time gold medalist, most clutch player in sports, and brought to you by Sobeys Feed the Dream campaign.
It's so fascinating that both of our most public and, I would say, accomplished, at least currently, women's team athletes, Christine Sinclair and Marie-Philippe Poulin, both seem to share this quality of not only are they obviously amazing, they're the top of their craft, right? Like, there's a case for both of them being the greatest player who have ever played their sports. Like, there is. Like, Sink is in the same category. But they're both so humble that it almost feels not awkward to interview them more. Like, she obviously is your friend, Ailish, and you can feel that rapport, but just this really, like, she doesn't want to talk about herself. Everything that you ask her, it's about other people constantly. But the thing is that sometimes that's disingenuous with people, right? You see it with them and they're trying to shine lights on others, but it actually is about themselves. For those two women, it just seems so authentic. And I gotta believe that so much of their success is not the goals that they score, but it is that moment that she references where she looks around and takes in the young defensemen on Team Canada who get their first gold medal. And that when she's sharing her memories from the games, that they are about other people. And that's just like who you want to go through a wall for. That's just who you want to do whatever for. And it's such an incredible, honestly, hearing her speak about it, it's hard not to get emotional. Like, she's such a powerful figure in sport. And the way that she speaks about it and other people is just like, it's inspirational beyond sport. It's just inspirational as a leader of anything.
Yeah, and there are layers to greatness, right? There's a level of greatness where you are great and you excel at your craft. And that's awesome. That's a status that very few people achieve. But there's an extra component there. And whether it's another layer of greatness you unlock or whether it's a leadership component, a personality component, but that highest level of greatness is raising other people around you to greatness. And that doesn't have to be like, hey, you make your line mate, like, hey, you help Sarah Nurse set the record for points in a tournament because, you know, you're a great line mate to have. It's, does everyone feel at their best around you? And does everyone feel like they can achieve their best around you? And yeah, I think with Marie and with Christine Sinclair, and, you know, we're very fortunate in this country that a lot of our best women athletes embody those things, right? That it's not, I mean, it is enough to be great, but the next layer, and I think the women we're talking about feel so passionately about not just raising the level of play of their teams, but of the entire like vibe around women's sports in the country. Mm-hmm. And you look at, you know, Sinclair or Steph LeBay and what they want to do with their success in terms of Canadian women's soccer. Or you look at Marie and it's, hey, yeah, we need a league and we can carry this momentum over. So I think I'm kind of going all over the place here, but there's a extra layer to greatness for some people and some athletes where it brings everyone up around you and it's not conscious, but you can kind of, it's one of those things that you know it when you see it or you know it when you feel it, and you feel it in that interview there with Marie Ailish.
I think a lot of what you're saying has to do with the weight that these athletes have to take on for that next generation. And she not only is inspiring current players and already at the top of her craft, but she has to think quite often about what a young girl would want to aspire to be. And that's not just, you know, the best player on the team. You want to look up to a player that's the best player on the team, the best leader, a great human, somebody that gives back to the community, someone that really cares. Like, she really, really cares about those young girls coming up the pipeline. She's not just like, hey, I want to win 4 gold medals or 5. It's like, I want to leave this game in a better place. And that's what makes her so special and Sinclair so special, is they have shouldered that weight as well as being the best player.
And it's such a heavy weight that I don't think you can carry it or want to carry it disingenuously. Like, I think it's too transparent. I think it's too heavy. If that's not a part of you and that's not who you are as an athlete and a person, I don't think you can fake that.
And there are players that just don't want to take on that weight. And that's fine. Not everybody can deal with that amount of pressure as well, to be the face of hockey, to be the best player, but also to be the next, you know, the next leader. And, you know, she's going to have a lengthy career. There's already people that want, if she does retire, which I really hope she doesn't, there are already requests for her to join management of NHL teams and to be a part of GM boards for women's sports. Like, that's because not only she's the best player, like, you could put anyone up there with stats, it's because of what she brings as an intangible off the ice and her dedication. So I can't say, like, I could speak days about how great of a person she is. And that's what makes me so excited, is that there's young girls and young boys looking at what's going on with women's hockey and seeing her as a role model, not just as the best player in sports. Wow. That was great.
It was a lot. It's very likely the GOAT, and if not the GOAT, the co-GOAT.
Yes.
That's the GOAT. So from one person who is taking a breather after a long period of activity and a well-deserved break, to someone who is stuck covering a break that is less just, we're going to talk to Jim Bowden after the break. We're going to talk about the MLB CBA situation. Monday is that fake deadline that the owners keep talking about to lose games. And JD, I know you said yesterday that I kind of got to you with my frustration around baseball a little bit, and you're starting to feel frustrated too. You know what was really frustrating today? Open up the old Google calendar, and tomorrow was supposed to be the spring training opener for the Blue Jays. I'm ticked off. We're going to talk to Jim Bowden about it. I'm so in my head about saying it the flipped way. Anyway, we're going to talk to Jim about that. The Athletic and analyst at MLB Network and CBS Sports, sort through the CBA stuff, and then we'll tee up the weekend. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, J.D. Buckus, and on the aux cord, Ailish Forfar. A little semi-sonic for you. Closing time could be coming up Monday for Major League Baseball and the Players Association. That is the, I would say, artificial deadline in terms of not losing games for this baseball season. To help us sort through that, former MLB general manager, current MLB columnist at The Athletic, and analyst at MLB Network Radio and CBS Sports, Jim Bowden. Jim, good morning, man. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Doing well. I would be better if when I fire up my old calendar today and I look and see, there's a Toronto Blue Jays spring training game in my calendar for tomorrow. If that were actually taking place and instead we were bringing you on to talk about all the wonderful Blue Jays things for the 2022 season and not a labor stoppage. So I guess we'll start big. How are you, man? You tired of this yet?
Yeah, of course I'm tired of it. You know, I think it's really frustrating that the negotiations are just so incremental. I'm really surprised that we don't have a bigger push from one side to the other to try to create more compromise. The biggest issue right now is the CBT, and they keep putting that on the back burner. But without an agreement on the CBT, it's hard to find a deal. Once they get that element done, I see a pathway of a quick, easy deal. But each side keeps wanting to irritate the other. You know, this deadline of Monday, which the union just laughs at, because it's no real deadline. It's a made up one, which really doesn't mean a thing. And that irritates the other side. Then the other side comes back and says, well, if you're going to do that and you're going to cancel games and tell us we're not going to get paid, then we're going to take expanded playoffs off the table and you're going to lose $100 million. So it's just the childish back and forth. It's so frustrating because we really should just be sitting and talking about the dollars and trying to find compromise. Now, the problem is, from the owner's side, they won the last two CBAs significantly. Not close, significantly. Since the last two CBAs, the revenue has increased at a ridiculous rate, but the offers that are coming from the clubs are not commensurate to that increase in revenue. Rather, it's kind of based on what happened in the last two negotiations. So, you know, we're hundreds of million dollars apart, and yet at the same time, if we could get a mediator or a third party to come in, this is not that difficult to settle, and they're not as far apart as you would think. Now, I'm not saying hundreds of million dollars apart, because they are, but in this type of industry, truthfully, it's not as much as people think.
Yeah, it's all relative, right? Like, you're talking about a couple hundred million dollars out of a eight-figure pie here over the life of this CBA, or sorry, much bigger than eight figures. This is how small my brain works with money is, yes, we'd be talking 11 figures. So how real is this Monday deadline? I know that the player side would argue, and justifiably so, in my opinion, that that's an artificial deadline, that the owners have the option to continue on under the terms of the old CBA while they negotiate a new one, and that this is an owner forced lockout. How firmly are the owners going to stick to, hey, if you don't give in by Monday, we're missing games and you're missing paychecks? Or is there some flexibility around that where if, hey, Monday morning, the final chat and you're at the finish line, maybe that can get extended out a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, let's be realistic on that. If you did a deal on March the 3rd, that would give you 28 days between that and March 31st opening day, and you could open on time. You can open on time. It would still give the players 4 weeks to get ready. But they want to create a deadline, so they've created this artificial deadline. Everything's negotiable. And you can sit there and say, well, you guys are going to start losing money and we're not going to make up the game. So players understand you're going to start losing money on Tuesday morning. That's the message, because they want players to have a sense of urgency. It just doesn't work in 2022. Everything is too transparent. Everybody understands what's happening. Once there's a deal, both sides are going to try to figure out a way to play as many games as possible, because both sides benefit by playing 162 games. So once the deal is done, okay, let's find a way. We'll play some Sunday seven-inning doubleheaders, and we'll find a way to get the revenue back, because the owners want the revenue of all 162 games. They don't want a shortened season. Again, this is just created for leverage. It's created to try to get a deadline. It's trying to put pressure, because there's no movement on either side. And I think the owners were hoping that putting this deadline would cause the players to make a little bit of a jump. But they're not, period, and haven't.
And I've been impressed by the solidarity there, where you have guys at the very top of the salary scale holding firm that, no, for the long-term health of the game, we got to bring up the bottom. We got to bring up the young players and the entry-level salary. You know, it's impressive, especially compared to the last two rounds of negotiation, where the MLBPA did not come off super strong and maybe didn't stick together as much. I want to localize this a little bit. You had...
Well, I just want to add to that, though, Ed, because there's two big reasons for that. Number one, the hiring of Bruce Meyer as the attorney, who's a really good negotiator and doesn't care. He's kind of an in-your-face kind of guy. And behind the scenes, Scott Boras, his influence... Max Scherzer is at the table. Max Scherzer is a Boras client. Scott Boras is as good as anyone at negotiating that I ever went against. And so his viewpoint and tactics on how to negotiate are being felt. So you get the Boras philosophy, you get the Myers track record, and that's why you're seeing the players not move, because that's how Scott does it. You just sit there and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, they'll move when they're ready to do a deal, but they're not going to move until the club side starts to make more significant movement.
So on the club side, let's localize this a little bit to Toronto, because there's a scenario where it's a really fun time to be a Blue Jays fan. Here in Toronto, we just got the okay that as of Tuesday, we can be back in arenas at full capacity. The Blue Jays are coming off of a really nice season where there's lots of room for optimism, lots of a couple of young stars on the rise. They've already lost half a season during the kind of Vlad and Bo ramp up window. You had a piece at The Athletic this week with your 20 MLB predictions for the 2020s. And your final 2 points were both about the Blue Jays. You're pretty optimistic about this team and where this team's going. If we lose a chunk of the baseball season, is there a team that is hurt more by this than a young on the rise team like a Toronto Blue Jays?
No, a young on the rise team that's in their prime, that's ready to have their breakout year, that's the team that gets hurt the most. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, look, if we start the season on April 25th, there won't be that much damage. I lived through that in 1995 when I was GM of the Reds. We got off to a slow start because we weren't ready. We went 1-8, but we ended up in the league championship series against the Braves. And to be honest with you, I didn't miss those first games. But by the time we started to get going, didn't matter. Playoffs and World Series felt the same. So as long as we can get a deal and we can have – it doesn't have to be opening day. If you end up playing the third week of April, it'll be fine. But to your point, the Blue Jays, to me, are ready. Okay, and I don't mean just ready to win the division. They're ready to win a World Series. This team is really good, and they're ready to jump. And I do think Mark Shapiro needs a move or two to finish it off. But this team is primed, and you want to take advantage of this group right now as they are. And, you mentioned Guerrero and Bichette, but also George Springer while he's still in his prime, the Silver Slugger winner, Teoscar Hernandez, Lourdes Gurriel, who lives down here in Miami. I mean, this team is ready to go. You got Gausman to replace Ray. So with him and Berrios and Ryu and Manoah, I mean, you've got the rotation exactly where you want it. You've got a good farm system coming, whether it be to help the big league club or to make trades. This team is ready to go. You don't want to lose this precious time. You don't want to lose this season. It would be devastating. You know, I feel for a team like the Blue Jays. I feel for individual players like Mike Trout. Mike Trout lost the pandemic year. He lost last year for being injured. Now he may lose this year as well. I mean, because this is a guy that's going to break, you know, Mays, Aaron, Bruce kind of records. And yet we're 3 years in his prime are going to be taken from him. So, yeah, it's absolutely devastating. So, yeah, we got to get an agreement. We got to get the season going because this is going to be a year where the team from Canada has got a chance to dominate, in my opinion.
So let's be super optimistic then. We're going to be back in stadiums March 1st here. The Blue Jays are going to be good, and as you said, they're, quote, ready to win a World Series. They obviously need to add. Monday morning, 9 a.m., the deal gets done, MLB and MLBPA. We've got a season. It's rapid-fire offseason. What are you looking at the Toronto Blue Jays to address first? Because obviously they did a couple things before everything shut down, but they, like a lot of teams, had a chunk of their offseason left to do. What is priority 1A if you're Mark Shapiro when this deal gets done?
I kind of feel like there's that one big move away from me predicting them, you know, to win the World Series, right? Like, I've wanted them, and I've been pounding the table for a year. I want them to get Jose Ramirez, and I want Ramirez to play third base, and I want that left-handed bat. I want the power. I want the speed. He would fit in perfectly on that team. I think he's a guy that just completely changes the needle for the Blue Jays and puts him at a whole nother level. So I kind of want the big trade. And I kind of feel like the farm system has enough to satisfy Chris Antonetti. And the relationship between Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, and Chris Antonetti, Mike Chernoff, is so good that it's just a marriage that, to me, is just a matter of time before it happens. Now, it may not happen in spring training. It may happen July 30th. But I think that if I'm looking at it, that's the one move. And, of course, you never get enough pitching. You never get enough bullpen help. But to me, I really want that left-handed bat, and I really want one more impact hitter, and I think Ramirez is the perfect answer.
Yeah, they seem like perfect trade partners, right? And they have for a while. We've had and heard reports or rumblings that they actually got somewhat close during the deadline last year. And now with the loss of Semien and the hope that this team doesn't, you know, take a step back from an offensive standpoint, it would seem pretty clear that he would be a guy that they would want to go out and address. I remember talking to you last year, Jim. You've always been a Blue Jays believer. Like, I remember last year before the season started, you came on with me. We had a discussion about your thoughts on the Blue Jays outfield. And you thought, hey, you know what? These guys have the best offensive outfield in baseball. And you've been pretty bullish about guys like Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. A lot of people have Lourdes in trades. A lot of people believe that he is a guy that, because of his contract, his age, and, yes, his ability, that he is someone that a lot of teams around baseball would covet. If it comes down to a deal this offseason where the Jays are looking to improve their roster, again, hoping that we do get an offseason, is he a guy that you feel like they can move, or is he a non-touchable player still for you?
Well, I never said he was a non-touchable player. I'm not that guy, right? Like, I don't believe you ever have guys, you know, outside of Guerrero and Bichette. You don't have guys you're not going to listen to. I'm a big fan of Gurriel. I think he's a really good player. I think he's got more in the tank than we saw. But, I mean, you know, last year, 20 homers, 80 RBIs, hit 270, had 28 doubles. This is a good player. Now, does he stand in the way in a trade to get Jose Ramirez? Of course not. Does he stand in the way to get Matt Chapman? Of course not. But I love the outfield. You know, I've said that to you guys. I mean, I think when you got Hernandez in right field and you got a healthy George Springer in center and you got Gurriel and you got Grichuk, I mean, you're set. You're fine. That's not an issue with this team. And to me, I'd rather just keep adding. But do I let somebody like Gurriel stand in the way to get a player? If I can get a Ramirez as an example or a Matt Chapman as an example, of course not. He can be part of the package.
So, Jim, you picked the Toronto Blue Jays to win the World Series in that piece at The Athletic. And if there were ever a sales job, I mean, we were teammates at The Athletic for a long time. If there were ever a sales job, though, it's former GM picks your team to win the World Series. It's a good one. You just outlined some of the roster stuff they have to do. And obviously, this is baseball. Like, when we pick a World Series favorite, we're talking like maybe 15% odds or something like that.
Right.
For that to come to fruition, what does this season look like for you in terms of Vladimir Guerrero? Like, does he have to be an MVP level guy? Can they win the World Series with the same season he had last year? Do you think there's another layer there for him to unlock? Because obviously he is the ceiling of this club.
Yeah, let Guerrero just do what he did last year. I'll take that every single year. Can he just do that for 10 years? That would be wonderful. That was an MVP year if it wasn't for Otani, right? He wins it. Bo Bichette may end up getting more MVP votes this year than Guerrero. It may be Bichette's year. It's not just the talent of those two kids. It's the personality, the makeup, the work ethic. They care, their passion. You know, those I've always loved those up-and-coming teams. And as you know, since 2009, since I got on the media side, I've covered every single World Series. And when I'm on the field, it seems every single year I'm covering those up-and-coming guys that break out, whether it's Bogart's endeavors in Boston or whether it's Correa and Bregman in Houston. It just seems every single year it could be Corey Seager and Bellinger with the Dodgers. But every year that I'm sitting there covering the World Series, it's teams that have either homegrown guys or guys that are in their mid-20s just breaking out. Those are the players that I cover. And I look at the Blue Jays team, and I have the vision of seeing, you know what, that's a team I'll probably be covering in late October and spend Halloween watching Bichette hit a walk-off. Like, that's how I view Toronto. Not that it doesn't have work to be done, but if the rotation stays healthy, that's good enough to run the table. They've got offense, they've got speed, they've got power, they've got defense, they've got leadership in the front office that knows how to handle July when you get there and you have a chance to win. All the elements are there. You have the financial resources. You have an entire country supporting your team. And don't underestimate what that means to players and how that feels on a nightly basis. Great ballpark environment. So it's just, I think all the stars are aligning for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Jim, you just laid out What a dream that would be. I've been at wild card games. I've been at game, like the first playoff game in Toronto for baseball in decades. You lay out the, hey, late October walk-off scenario. And honestly, right now, I'd say give me 15,000 people on a weeknight game against a bad opponent. I'll take anything. I don't even need to dream on the Halloween walk-off. I'll take anything right now. Jim Bowden, former MLB GM, MLB columnist at The Athletic, analyst at MLB Network Radio and CBS Sports. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man. And hopefully next time we talk to you, we're talking about just how good and fun these Toronto Blue Jays are and the additions they've made and not more owner-oriented labor nonsense. Have a good one, man. Thanks again.
Thanks, you too. Appreciate it.
Jim Bowden, The Athletic, MLB Network Radio, CBS Sports, picking your Toronto Blue Jays to win the World Series if we get baseball this year.
I want that more than just about anything.
Yeah, I got the Raptors championship now. I don't.
Yeah,
but Jays or Leafs next. I don't.
As you said it, I thought about how broke I'll be if that happens, because the last two playoff runs, I bought strips for the postseason run. And there's this thing where they take the money off your credit card for these games, right? I had two tickets that I had purchased for both 2015 and 2016. And the deeper you get, obviously, the more expensive they get. And I remember thinking when, in 2015 especially, because I was making like no money, like looking at what the price was going to be if it hit my credit card, and just living in
fear. Like, uh-oh.
And there's this almost, yeah, you go, yeah. Do I want the Blue Jays to win the World Series? Of course. Do I want them to go? Did I buy those tickets for a reason? But it was one of those things where you go, you know, it wasn't the worst seeing that number taken off, but now I'll happily do it. I just still think about, God, that day where it comes through and it hits that bill, comes to, hey, you paid for the World Series tickets, buddy? Yep. Two? Yep.
What were the most expensive sporting tickets that you've ever paid for? Those. Yeah.
I had a strip to 2015 and 2016. So, yeah, those.
Yeah, for me, it's GSP title fight for UFC in Canada. That was probably the most expensive.
Did you pay for those, though?
Well, my dad.
What are the
doesn't count.
So that was a graduation gift, yeah. Okay, so that doesn't count. Then maybe the wild card game?
Yeah, probably, right? Hmm. But the wild card game wasn't that expensive. Which one?
The Orioles one, the Zach Britton.
Yeah, Orioles, right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because I spent on good tickets for that one.
You spent on good tickets for that game, yeah. Because I remember, like, that game, there was a lot of trepidation from people to go. That was actually the most spoiled this market has ever been, because everyone was crying about how making the wild card wasn't the playoffs, and the Jays down the stretch were having their difficulties, right? And everyone was stressed out, and a lot of people going to that game thought, I can't stand to see them lose, and it's not playoffs if they lose, and blah, 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 blah. And then I was there as well, and I had the time of my life. And
I had,
that was one of the best moments I've ever had as a sporting fan, if not the best moment. I have on my office wall the paper frame from that day, Edwin.
Along with your scowls, eh? Along with your scowls.
Your scowls.
I don't know what I was going to say there.
Scowls.
Okay, I was going to say skulls and maybe like, I don't know, calendar, scalender.
Marie-Philippe Poulin texted you that you're good at what you do, and I replied, I disagree. But yeah, sure, this is why.
Yeah, you can't pronounce the word skull.
Yeah,
skulls.
Yeah.
You know what happened to the last person who couldn't pronounce the word skull accurately? JD's got their skull on his shoulder now.
That
wild card game, my favorite thing about that game was I had tickets on the first baseline. I could like look right into the Orioles bullpen, and I could watch Zach Britton getting progressively more frustrated. It was excellent. That's how I remember it.
That was so fun, though, watching it from, because like I was behind home plate. And every pitcher that would come out of the bullpen, you'd go, now it's happening. And then the elation of it not amongst fans in the section, like, they're still not doing it. What an idiot. What a bozo.
Jimenez? No.
Yes, Jimenez. No. Of all the guys, of all the girls in all the bars, it's like you had to be Jimenez. So great. I love it to this day.
I would love nothing more than our show next week to be able to talk about real baseball stuff. We got a pretty loaded weekend. We got Raptors Hornets tonight at 7 p.m. on Sports at 590. We got Raptors Hawks 7:30 on Saturday. We got Leafs Wings 7:30 on Saturday. One thing we won't have next week, though, Ailish.
Yes, I am taking a few weeks off for personal time. So you will be joined by Justin Cuthbert for those couple of weeks. So he's getting into the saddle. Our guy has been on the show a few times. He's going to do a great job cover for me while I'm away. And I appreciate it very much. So there won't be any A-list for a while to my loyal A-listers.
That's
you know,
true.
You'll have to find. Oh, you're going to take over the A-list?
Or is this going to become?
It'll be just negative news.
No, it's going to be just the A-list still, but it's going to be Cuthbert. We're going to make him do it, but
oh,
it's still called
guy.
The A-list.
Yeah. And the extra we're going to make him do. Him.
We're going to stuff Cuthbert full of chips.
Yeah.
Oh,
get
nice.
Him to do
the
A-list.
Try to replicate.
And
then,
this poor guy, like he's going to step in and have to do the wake and rake, and the bar you've set lately is too high. This poor guy.
I wish him all.
I mean, he's
big shoes to fill.
Yeah, like you guys talk about me making excuses. This guy came on our show as a guest and tried to like lie about what his picks had been the last time he was on.
You
got to
tell him on Monday.
Yeah,
you
got to
put him in his place Monday.
So yeah, we're losing the heart of our show and we're gaining a liar.
Rookie initiation. Yeah, rookie initiation.
We're gaining another lying excuse maker when it comes to betting.
Oh no.
Yes, we're gonna tell him the bar is high. The 11 wake and rake win streak is not far behind.
Maybe when I come back, someone will have topped it.
Yeah, and you are coming back, and we are going to miss you immensely. And
yes, I didn't get fired. For those people that will wonder where I am.
Yeah, but
I hope not yet. At least
I look forward to, because not everyone listens to every section of the podcast or every section of the show. So we've put this at the end, which I don't know was the best part of the strategy. It was the only workable part of the strategy. But yes, now that I think about it,
no one's gonna
Blake
know.
And I,
I'll send out a
we're
tweet.
We're all gonna have, yeah. But we're gonna, like I said, you're coming back to the show. We're gonna miss you immensely. Obviously, you mean an incredible amount to the show, and you get the time you get, to however long it ends up actually taking for you, it'll always be that way. But yes, we are going to miss you a lot. And I don't even know how depressing the show is going to be without you, because it's just going to be Blake, me being negative and Blake being like, you know, numbers.
You let me know if the podcast subscriptions get, you know, the numbers go down. You get I'll look at the text line once in a while.
If anything,
people
will
be like, where
what you could do
happiness
is continue to subscribe to the podcast.
Yes, please.
You know,
so then there's a show for me when I come back. Actually, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Well, no, the concern would be if all that stuff goes down, you'll come back and it's just your show. It's just 4 hours of A-list and JD and I are out of here. It's like you guys didn't have A-list to mediate and bring the vibes up, and the times you disagreed got derailed.
Just say bing bong a couple times for me, okay?
We will. You gave me my yesterday, by the way, we gave each other our Christmas presents. You know, Ailish and I bought Christmas presents for one another. Blake didn't. Unfortunate.
Where was Blake? Okay?
That's not true. Yeah. They're right there. They're in that closet.
Whatever.
You can see.
I love how he just literally pointed. He was like, they're right there. And it was could not have been more not a thing. That was just, he pointed out
in the
space.
Closet.
I know. It's like, oh, closet. Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah. I have extra stuff for you guys. It's all hidden, you know, back
there.
Yeah,
well, here's the thing. I have a nice gift for Ailish in there. JD, yours is just a lump of coal. It doesn't go bad.
Perfect.
So
not
I can give
first
that
time.
To you next
time. Not
Christmas.
The first time. I'm good with it. Coal is great. The thing about coal, you take it, you throw it back through Santa's window. Duh. Anyway, it's the Fan Morning Show. Ailish, we're going to miss the hell out of you. JD, Ailish, Blake, we'll see you next week.
Bing bong.